Hello, Tom Tilley here. Welcome to the Hack Podcast. You're about to meet a billionaire with big ideas on plastic. It's Andrew Twiggy Forrest.
We might fool people for a bit longer until the oceans get completely destroyed. Then there'll be huge blowback. So let's make a change now so we don't destroy the oceans, so we don't destroy our environment.
You're going to find out about Twiggy's big plan to solve the plastic problem in just a moment. Plus, do you believe in astrology?
I'm an Aries sun sign and a Scorpio moon sign.
All right, maybe you don't, but have you seen the memes?
They made it funny. They made it super funny with the memes and stuff.
Could the memes and all the social media around astrology win you over to, I guess, a new wave of astrology? That story in just a moment. First, to breaking news out of Canberra, there's been another big win against the Centrelink robo-debt system that so many of you have been affected by.
Hack.
There is a sickness at the heart of robo-debt which needs to be killed.
Triple J.
Yeah, one 33-year-old woman, Dina Amato, and her lawyers have stood up to Centrelink and won. It's a massive victory for the hundreds of thousands of people, mostly young people, who believe the automated debt system known as robo-debt is unfair. Deanna Amato's win in court follows the government's admission last week that basing debts only on their income averaging calculation is unfair. And the news today is that the federal court ruled that calculating and recouping debts on that basis alone is unlawful. Shalala Madora is our reporter in Canberra. Shalala, thanks for joining us. How important is this decision for people who feel blighted by the system, which has led to tons of complaints since it was introduced in 2016?
Tom, it's a really big setback for the government because, as you mentioned, it does rule that any debts that were incurred through this thing called debt averaging, which is basically when the ATO data is spread over a whole year, is averaged out over a fortnight. So it has really big repercussions for people who work casually or who might only get Centrelink payments for part of the year. The court has found that using debt averaging is not valid and not lawful. So it's a really big issue. As you said, a ton of people are affected by robo-debt. We know the most recent figures show that 1 million letters were sent out by Centrelink since 2016 when this program started. And 20% of those letters actually didn't occur any debt whatsoever. So those people who got these letters owed $0. So it's a pretty big thing. And a lot of people have been saying that they have simply paid off fines because they got these letters at a time when they didn't realise they could challenge them. So there's a lot of question marks about going backwards, what this actually will mean.
Yeah, very interesting to put this in the context of last week's announcement from the government that they wouldn't rely solely on income averaging as a means to calculate people's debts. This decision today now essentially confirms that system was unlawful. What's the government's reaction to the court outcome today?
Yeah, Tom, minutes before we got into the studio today, we got a response from the minister who is responsible for this, Stuart Robert. His office has told us that unfortunately for people who think this means the end of robo-debt, it doesn't. They're going to push ahead with what they've got. As you mentioned, they did change aspects of robo-debt last week. They changed debt averaging going forward. They've paused all future robo-debts. But if you have an outstanding robo-debt, unfortunately, it doesn't mean it's automatically waived. A spokesperson for Minister Robert said, "We will not be discussing the legal position pending further publicly announced potential litigation." Now, this means that there is still a class action lawsuit up against the robo-debt system, which has about 4,000 plaintiffs to it. So the government's saying, "We're not going to tell you what legal basis we're making our rules on because we've got a challenge looming ahead."
Yeah, very interesting. The big case that was ruled on today, and then that class action coming up as well. So lots of legal pressure on robo-debt after all the public pressure in the media, given how many people feel blighted by the system. Thanks for bringing us the latest. You're listening to Hack. Big news this afternoon that the federal court has ruled that Centrelink acted unlawfully in its robo-debt recovery from a 33-year-old woman called Deanna Amato. So along with last week's announcement that Centrelink would no longer use the income averaging calculation as the only means of calculating your debt, this means big and welcome changes to Centrelink's automated debt recovery system. Let's find out more about the significance of today's federal court decision. Dr. Darren O'Donovan is a senior lecturer in administrative law at the La Trobe University. Darren O'Donovan, what precedent does today's ruling set?
Well, I hope that it sets a really strong precedent, and I think it needs to send a really strong message to your listeners that if they know someone affected by these deaths, they can take action. They should ask for an authorised review officer review. And they should really try and get their money back, despite what the minister is saying. Because what this ruling does is tear down the core premise behind RoboDebt, the entire reason it was launched. It was launched to set a moving treadmill under people when they engage with the department. Whenever you called, if you didn't have your payslips from 7 years ago, you were told, we can hit you with average data. Well, that power trick is over and should be seen as over by this government. And the human impacts, and I'm speaking on Triple J, and I want to congratulate you for all your coverage, because 125,000 young people under 24 got one of these. 59% of these deaths were given to people under 35. This is about the young generation, the young creative people in Australia. If there's going to be a Courtney Barnett in the future, they'll have had a RoboDebt, you know? I mean,
well, the reason we got into it, we got into it in such detail, is because when we first started covering it in late 2016, early 2017, we saw the massive reaction. We saw how many people in the Triple J audience were directly affected, infuriated and really set back by this. Stephen's on the line. You've paid back your RoboDebt already. You have a question?
I have, Tom. I've paid back $4,500.
Wow.
I have $300 remaining. And I've done exactly what was just suggested before, and I've asked under Freedom of Information laws for it to be calculated how they came to it. I know it was through income averaging. I actually just got off the phone with Centrelink, and they are still pushing the line of me providing payslips, which I've refused to do because it is back that far. I can't even contact that employer. And they're very much trying to get me to provide the evidence put the onus back on me, which I think is quite interesting.
And they are only using the income averaging to calculate your debt. Okay, so Dr. Darren O'Donovan from La Trobe, what insight can you provide to Stephen's case given today's court decision and last week's announcement from the government?
Well, my instant reaction to that is you need to contact a lawyer, and legal aid lawyer, call Victoria Legal Aid or one of the community legal centres that are part of the National Social Security Rights Network and see if you can get an outcome. But isn't that incredible? Isn't that incredible? This department has 133 senior executives. And I don't think there are 133 welfare-only lawyers in Australia. And today, the economic and social rights team at Victoria Legal Aid, that precious resource, I'm proud to know some of them, they really stood up. They fixed a question that the government kept disappearing. And now it's beyond law, Tom, and it's actually beyond party politics, because this really is about the rule of law. And even if you're on the right side of politics, the people I have met, people are entitled to the quiet dignity of a well-reasoned, well-evidenced decision.
So,
I cannot believe that I'm saying that, you know?
Well, Darren, does that mean Stephen's case, where he's already paid back more than $4,000,
will he be in a much stronger position
because of today's court decision?
Absolutely. That's the good news.
There you go, Stephen. A bit of good news for you right there.
Yeah.
The good news, that is good news, but kind of, Tom, I wish I hadn't paid it now.
Well, yeah.
Considering.
I mean, again, the thing is, right, the thing is you need to, if the payslips exist, you know, you need to think about trying to get them, you know, but we need a policy on this. There isn't a policy. So there have been numerous people who have approached Centrelink and asked them to get the payslips. They are too poor to afford bank statements. The employer is in the wind. There is a policy that they will get the payslips.
Okay.
There is actually a policy.
Stephen, thanks for your call. Yeah. David in Hobart, what's your situation?
Is that me?
Yeah, got you there. You've had RoboDebts as well. What's your reaction to today's announcement?
I am ecstatic. I had two RoboDebts, and one was just before it hit the news, and I was suffering from depression at the time and didn't question it. And the second one was a couple of years ago. And despite the fact I'd kept all of my payslips, it took me 2 years to clear it, fighting tooth and nail after still getting debt collectors and stuff involved.
Wow. And was yours another case where the only evidence that they were basing their calculations on was this average income tool?
Absolutely.
Okay, interesting. That seems to be the thing that's created so many problems and the thing they've decided to wound back. Just very quickly, Darren, is I guess, the timing of this quite interesting. Do you think that the government made their decision and their announcement last week knowing how this court case was going to play out?
Absolutely, because they sent a letter to the federal court and they handed back the 10% penalty they put on Ms. Amato. They handed back the money that they previously handed back, the money they garnished. They knew. We have been warning them for 3 years. The barrister in the case gave a public speech in 2017. We have been attacked for challenging the legal basis. I've been called disrespectful. So it's quite an emotional thing. And we're all, you know, it's been very isolating to actually cover the story, to talk about the story. And today is about the ordinary people, like those two people who just called, who stood up and spoke truth.
Yep.
And we need to mark and respond to that truth.
Well, people are feeling your passion there on the text line. Someone says, Dr. Darren O'Donovan for PM. Another person says, love this doctor's passion. Go hard, mate. This government looks after those with franking credits, but goes after those who are financially vulnerable. That's from Dan. Thanks for your time, Darren.
No worries. Thanks a million.
Dr. Darren O'Donovan there, very passionate about the problems robo-debt has caused for vulnerable young people. Like a lot of you listening right now, he's a senior lecturer in administrative law at the La Trobe University. Someone else says, I'd saved all my bank statements and payslips in hard copy and sent them to Centrelink, and they sent me a letter to say it was waived. Just lucky I'm a hoarder of paperwork.
So you've been obsessed with this problem for the last few years. What is the problem in your own words?
Plastic. Simple as that.
On Triple J.
All right, you're about to meet a billionaire. His name is Andrew Twiggy Forrest. He's estimated to be worth $11 billion Australian dollars. Most of his money came from mining iron ore with his company Fortescue Metals. Since his wealth has boomed, he's become one of Australia's most active philanthropists. From Indigenous employment to early education, he's thrown himself at a range of issues through his organisation, the Mindaroo Foundation. Plastics is the latest problem he's attacking, and he's launched a big, bold idea called See the Future, spelled S-E-A as in the sea. Great pun there. Basically, he wants to get the biggest polluters to contribute to a fund that'll encourage the use of recycled plastics as the key ingredient for new plastic rather than petrochemicals. So let's find out more about it with the man himself, Andrew Twiggy Forrest. Thanks for joining us on Hack.
Tom, how are you, sir?
Hey, good, Andrew. Thanks for making time for us on Triple J.
Yeah, mate, thanks for taking time. I love Triple J, actually. I get on the app when I'm walking along the beach and tune in and tune out.
Oh, beautiful. Nice. All right. Well, you're best known for your iron ore mining in the Pilbara. Why have you developed this passion for fighting against single-use plastics?
You know, I grew up in the bush, and I grew up in a pristine environment and loved that. I mean, you can tell, even now in my new career as a miner, where Fortescue's mined, because the vegetation is richer where we put the soil back. So I've always had a really deep respect for the environment, and that caused me about 4 years ago to start a PhD, a doctorate in marine ecology. And to my absolute amazement, I wasn't learning how fish live. I was learning how marine life die. And that's at the hands of plastic. And the huge mortality of ocean life because of plastic, which the world is just not seeing, I found personally quite devastating, Tom.
Amazing. So you've realised the damage, or I guess really had a close, detailed scientific look at the damage plastics are doing to our marine ecology, and you've set up this $440 million scheme that will incentivise businesses to use less fossil fuel-based plastics and more recycled plastics. Tell us how it will work.
Yeah, basically what we're saying to the petrochemical industry of the world, the amazing thing here is that while there's about 700 only petrochemical, which makes all the plastic in the world, produced in the world, there's probably only 50 which matter. So we're looking at 50 companies who, if we can change their behaviour, could save literally our oceans from being destroyed by plastic. And it's talking to those companies and saying, hey, why don't we put a voluntary contribution into a fund
which you can control, you pass that cost on, and what that immediately does is make fossil fuel plastic, which is 100% of the problem, now more expensive than recycled plastic, which is 100% of the solution. Enough companies are saying, hey, that's actually a really good idea, and we get to participate in the recycled plastic industry, which is worth hundreds of billions of dollars if we stop wasting plastic.
Okay, so basically you put a levy or a tax on the production of fossil fuel plastics and then use that money to help generate growth in the recycled plastics industry.
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, Tom, I think you've nailed it. I'm talking about them making a contribution, an environmental and industry transition fund, a fund which helps them get all the building products of plastic, which is polymer, from plastic itself, not from fossil fuels.
Okay, and tell us how the money from the fund is invested so that it does increase the use of recycled plastics.
Okay, so big issue with plastic, instead of just plugging your big pipe into an oil well, you have to go the slightly harder step and collect the plastic. That costs a little bit of dough. So the money goes to collecting the plastic, and then the money also goes to changing the front-end design of your plastic maker, and instead of getting your building products from oil or gas, you get your building products from the waste plastic you have collected. That money gets used to both help you transition to getting your building products from plastic itself and to help you collect that building product.
So when you talk about collecting plastics, I've read that that means you'll be actually paying people, particularly in developing countries, to actually just walk around and collect plastic so that it can then be recycled.
Yeah, see, the beauty of this is that where the pollution is so much worse, where the destruction of our marine life is in fact coming from, where it's most visible is Southeast Asia because of poverty. What I love about this plan is that all of that pollution suddenly becomes valuable. Suddenly it's not pollution anymore, it's a commodity. You can collect it, sell it, and make a dignified living as opposed to begging or rag picking. You suddenly have a real job.
You're listening to Australia's iron ore mining magnate Andrew Twiggy Forrest, who's now trying to solve the world's plastic crisis. As you heard before, he's actually doing a PhD in marine ecology, which is part of the reason he got so passionate about this problem. On the text line, just got to say, Twiggy for Prime Minister, I never thought I'd want a billionaire miner as PM, but maybe Australia should consider it given our current state of affairs. Someone else says, the rich doing good, take that, commies. Someone else says, ironic to care so much about the environment and make millions from mining. All right, Andrew, we've seen reports this week that you've been able to win over one of the largest petrochemical companies, Saudi Aramco in Saudi Arabia. You've won them over to your scheme called See the Future. How did that negotiation go, and who else have you got on board?
Tom, I love your cut-through questions, mate. We were delighted to get Saudi Aramco on board because they are the largest energy company and indeed the largest company in the world. So all of a sudden with them on board, all other businesses started to pay real attention. But in particular, everyone on this radio station will use products from Coca-Cola, from Unilever, from Pepsi, from all these other brands. And those brands are the ones saying, hey, our customers want us to only use recycled plastic.
So you want to make that more visible, that decision by these big companies as to which plastics they use, so that us consumers can make an informed choice about which products we buy based on the type of plastic they use. How are you going to do that?
That takes us right back to the start of your interview, saying, you know, you're putting up $440 million. That is where that money goes. I want to invest $1 million per week to allow the world to know where its plastic is coming from. Is it coming from a good producer by recycled or has joined this initiative so it is creating more recycled plastic? Or is it coming from a bad producer, one which is quite happy for you to buy their products because you have no choice, but you then unwittingly are destroying the environment?
How do you go when you have these kinds of conversations with these huge petrochemical companies who profit from making the kind of cheap plastic that's damaging the environment?
First, I say, look, this is a all of life risk for our oceans. And, you know, we might fool people for a bit longer until the oceans get completely destroyed. Then it'll be huge blowback. So let's make a change now so we don't destroy the oceans, so we don't destroy our environment, and we do protect your business.
Okay, just quickly going to ask you questions on two other things, dodgy Facebook ads and rugby. On the Facebook ads, your name and image has been used in these fake Facebook ads to scam people out of hundreds of thousands of dollars. Tell us about the letter you wrote to Mark Zuckerberg.
So, look, Tom, I've been speaking to Facebook for some time, warning them that if they don't do something about stopping innocent Australians, particularly those who've worked all their lives, from having their savings scammed off them, then I will go very public and I will call for laws which recognise that they are a publishing house. All these publishing houses, like the one we're speaking on now, are responsible for telling the truth. Now, Facebook, Amazon, Google, they've run this great big scam to governments around the world that, hey, we're not a publishing house. You don't need to regulate us. Well, Tom, that is a pernicious lie. And right now, we let them off. We say, you can run any sort of lie. You can run ads for Adolf Hitler, Joseph Stalin. You can do anything you like, so long as you pay us some money. And I'm saying that is not good enough.
All right, Andrew, let's quickly touch on rugby. 2 years ago, you lost your beloved Western Force rugby team from the Super Rugby competition, and it inspired you to start your own rugby competition involving Western Australia and Asia, the Global Rapid Rugby Comp. It's going to launch next year. Does this competition actually make sense for rugby in the broader scheme of things, or are you just still channeling the hurt from losing your beloved team?
No. What it does is exposes the game to the 70% of the population of the world, Tom, which exists in our time zone, and which is all throughout Southeast Asia, China, India, etc., to say, we have a fantastic game here. Why don't you try it instead of badminton or ping pong? And, you know, they're saying, wow, what a game. Why hasn't someone else already spoken to us about this? This is great fun. It builds our community, builds our clubs. So we're going out and marketing the great game of rugby to where it hasn't been before, and I'm delighted that I have that privilege.
Well, it's the game they play in heaven, so why not play it in Asia?
A game played by thugs in heaven, you reckon, Tom?
Exactly. Andrew, great to speak to you. Thanks for joining us on Triple J.
Thanks so much, Tom. All the best, sir.
Hack on Triple J.
Andrew Forrest from Fortescue Metals talking about his plastics idea plus his thoughts on Facebook on the same page as Sacha Baron Cohen there and rugby.
Hack. Astrology is this, like, spiritual thing, but it's not in any way discriminatory.
On Triple J.
What star sign are you? It's always a great conversation starter, and whether you believe in astrology or not, it's usually just a way to talk about your own personality traits. Astrology's been around for thousands of years, but it's getting a new wave of attention through memes and social media. I guess through social media, conversations can really take a life of their own, and it's interesting to look at how that's changing the way our generation is connecting with astrology. Let's find out how that relationship's going with Georgia Hitch, who is obviously a Libra.
My name is Jasmine. I'm 21 and I'm an Aries sun sign and a Scorpio moon sign.
At first I started kind of getting into it ironically because there's a lot of stereotypes that I fit into with my star sign. Like, I'm very aggressive and like fiery spirit sort of thing. But then the more kind of coincidences I found to be true, I was like, maybe there's something in this. Oh my God.
Over the last couple of years, the number of people, just like Jasmine Newton McKay, engaging with astrology across the world has boomed. This isn't totally unusual though. Historically, astrology has come into vogue in waves. The difference now is that it's all happening online. So, what is it about the digital space that's making it so appealing?
They made it funny. They made it super funny with the memes and stuff. But I think that there's just more information out there. Way back when, you'd have to look into books and things for research, but the information is just at the touch of our fingers, so it's easier to come across.
One of the people that's making it funny is Courtney Perkins, aka the creator of Not All Geminis on Instagram. It's now followed by over 500,000 people, and it's still growing. But why is it that generations that are more into science than they are religion are loving astrology? Courtney reckons it's pretty simple.
Is religion scientific? No. Is, like, not shaving your beard because it's the World Series scientific? No. But really, I think what astrology is, like, best used as is, like, a tool for thoughtfulness and, like, being conscientious of who you are in the world and the way you interact with people.
Courtney also thinks a big part of the reason younger people are turning to astrology is because the world is, well, a bit of a mess at the moment.
People are kind of looking for answers and guidance in this time when it feels like all of our idols are failing us and the world is crumbling and climate change is happening. And it is nice to feel like you have some kind of guidance and some place in the world. I think I primarily use astrology as a tool for introspection. And therapy isn't cheap, but astrology is free.
I want to know how to feel more safe and comfortable and secure with all of this drama that's happening. And I think also with my own page, with like the memes, like even though every single thing I post is dragging the signs and just being shady as hell, if you can make somebody laugh about a problem, then you're helping them like heal from it, you know?
This is Jake Register. He runs the Jake's Astrology Instagram and Twitter accounts. He knows a bit about how astrology can help you heal. It's exactly what it did for him. A few years ago, Jake dropped out of college and moved home while he dealt with his own mental health issues. The 23-year-old says he's always been interested in astrology, but his new free time meant he could dig a bit deeper. He found making memes and doing research not only made him laugh, but it gave him a sense of control that helped him make sense of what was going on around him.
I like to think of astrology as like a seatbelt, where if it's like if you're in a car going down the highway and you're about to run into somebody else, if you're not wearing a seatbelt, you're just going to fly out, you know? But if you're wearing a seatbelt, it might hurt. You might get some bruises, but you're going to be way safer. And it might kind of feel like that to some people, because that's what it feels like to me, where it's like, okay, I know that this really difficult period is going to come up soon because I know what is happening with the planets in relation to my own birth chart.
That's something Jasmine Newton-McKay definitely agrees with.
It's just nice. It's like having a life coach almost, just being like, you know, something great might happen to you today. If it does, be aware of that and just be careful not to, like, tread lightly.
But it's not all just to make us feel good or laugh. Marketing expert Dr. Stephen Dan from the Australian National University says some of these accounts are big business. The whole industry is worth billions of dollars, particularly because it's an easy and a pretty successful model. They lure you in with the memes and then try and sell you chart readings or other products. But Stephen Dan reckons as long as people keep that in mind, there's no reason not to enjoy it.
There'll be people who'll be trying to do the, oh, I'm a skeptic and this is all sort of nonsense, is a terrible thing. It's like, people play fantasy football. They also have fun from that. People are currently playing fantasy how does the world work with astrology, and it's no different to playing fantasy football. It's fun and they're enjoying it, and that's good.
Hack on Triple J.
Marketing expert Dr. Stephen Dan from the ANU ending that story from Georgia Hitch, who is definitely a Libra. I'm a Capricorn, by the way. Classic, huh? All right, to discuss that further, we're joined by Dr. Jonathan Hutchinson. He's a lecturer in online media and internet research from the University of Sydney. Jonathan, it was really interesting to hear about the way social media and meme culture has brought a new spin to an age-old thing like astrology.
Yeah, I think it kind of lends itself to being the absolute perfect medium for this kind of world and communication, actually, because I think we're quite familiar with memes now within the social media space, at least. So we understand how to create them quite easily, and I think we also understand how to interpret them as well. So, you know, they have this kind of arrangement of, you know, imagery with some kind of caption over the top. And when you mix that with, you know, the conversation around astrology, it really conveys the message quite well.
Well, it brings out the irony of the whole thing, which doesn't seem to be possible in traditional magazines where it looks like people still take it seriously. This allows sort of an intersection of people who believe in it quite earnestly and people who are taking the piss.
Yeah, so it's really fascinating, actually, because you've got this satirical approach which first arrives with a lot of these sorts of publications or social media pieces, and then it goes through this interesting transformation phase where suddenly it's serious and it's real and it means something to a whole lot of people. But I think, you know, you're right there, Tommy, in that we still kind of look at it. Some people are sort of looking at it going, oh, you know, can you not see the humor in that? Whilst other people are, you know, really dedicated to the cause, which is, I guess, not too dissimilar to the whole astrology field, you know, itself.
Yeah. So what is it about social media and memes that allows that kind of, I don't know, that light of humor and irony to shine in ways that other mediums don't? Is it about the context for those images that are in memes, as in the conversation that goes on around them, the amount of different people that can engage with it? Or is it about just the way we've evolved the use of those media creations, the way we do imagery and words and text and other content now?
Yeah, I guess it's a sort of a combination of a lot of those things. But one thing to think about here is that memes have become incredibly easy to create. So I think everyone suddenly went running towards the production.
Accessibility.
Yeah, that's right, accessibility. Plus the other factor is shareability. So something like that, it's really low production skill, pretty easy to make. You can put it onto Instagram. I see it. I'm amused by it. I put it onto Facebook. I put it onto Twitter, whatever it might be. The shareability aspect of these little snippets of culture are what has made, memes so popular as communication tools.
Yeah, and taking some things like astrology, who maybe really resonated deeply for a niche audience, to a bigger audience who enjoy it for different reasons.
Yeah, I guess so. Like some of the things I've seen which are really interesting are these typical sorts of kind of poll sorts of questions where, you know, what kind of star sign are you? Who's my perfect partner? Who's, you know, how much money can I make this week or whatever it might be? I think those sorts of questions and you know, scenarios are just perfectly suited for something like a meme, which can then be shared across social media.
All right, great to hear your insights, Dr. Jonathan Hutchinson from the University of Sydney. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Tom.
Hack on Triple J.
Fascinating conversation there about the way memes and social media can bring a new sort of life to things like astrology that have been around forever. But when you change the conversation in the way social media can be a lot funnier and involve so many more people. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast today. I'll catch you tomorrow.